Welcome to The Pin Down, a Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys. And, as always, I am joined by my co-host, DBB draft expert Blake Silverman. Blake, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Ready to talk some Pistons hoops.
Absolutely. And we could be more excited. We are joined by the man himself, DBB's managing editor, our guy, Sean Corp. Sean, how are you feeling after this incredible start to the year?
I'm feeling that I love the weather and hate the basketball. So excited to talk about the basketball part.
Love the weather. It's getting darker like 6 p.m. now with all the time change. I'm not loving the weather. I'm not there with you. Oh, my gosh. All right. Let's just jump right into it. First thing we got on the docket tonight, let's start talking about Cade Cunningham. Again, you know, I know that we touched on this last week, Blake, you and I did, but I feel like this is kind of unavoidable at this point, especially after the last couple of games he's had. He's really struggled. Teams have been throwing the kitchen sink at him. He's basically been the only focus for the opposing defenses. They've been begging just about anybody else on this roster to beat them, and the roster has politely declined so far. So, Sean, let's start with you. What have you made just in general of Cade's recent struggles, but then also, you know, those struggles within the team context, the lineup he's been playing in, just overarching, what have been your thoughts?
I mean, it's obvious that he doesn't have the kind of players around him that will help him be successful. At the same time, he was drafted number one overall so that he could be the person that set the tone, set the baseline, made sure nobody, you know, fell too deep into ruts, despair. So it's not, you can't absolve him of the blame of what's happening with his game and with the Pistons' performance. He's supposed to rise above and sort of be that baseline that the Pistons can operate from. He's not executing at that level. He's really struggling. I think it's fair to say that he struggled, and I think it's fair to contextualize just how much he's struggling. He's playing at a level that's abnormal for any former number one overall pick. And he's just not efficient. He's not executing. And he's making the kind of mistakes that are not supposed to be part of his profile. He's supposed to be the guy that, you know, he sets the pace of the game. He doesn't get rattled. He is the one that sort of makes you bend to how he wants to execute. And right now, he's making careless decisions, bad passes, getting picked, having a loose dribble. So it's just not a good spot for him. The hope is that once the Pistons are whole and the team concept around him can sort of slot people into roles, and his decision-making gets a lot easier because he has many more options on the floor, these things start to level out. But it's not been a stellar start for Cade or the Pistons this season.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of it really is the defensive attention he's getting. That, like, he does have those lackadaisical turnovers, like you said, some bad decisions. But, I mean, when you look at his turnovers, almost the great majority come from when the defense is collapsing on him and he's feeling that pressure. So I think he just has to find a way to figure out how to take care of the ball in those situations. Like, oftentimes he is trying to, when he notices defenses collapsing on him, he is trying to make like a kick or feed someone down low. And that's when the ball gets turned over. So if he can find a way to hit the right passing lane, I think that'll go a long way. I mean, I think there does have to be some restructuring of the lineup to put the best pieces around him. But right now, I do think a ton of it is just the defensive pressure and priority he's getting from opponents.
So I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on, you know, the context. But like you just brought up the lineups, right? And obviously this has been a big focus with how defense have been playing him. Really noticeable against that Bulls game. They were throwing 3-4 defenders his direction almost every single time he turned the corner on a pick and roll. But in particular here with the Hawks game, They did just about the same thing. It wasn't as aggressive as what the Bulls did, but they still were throwing just about everything they could at Cade Cunningham. And I believe he did actually have, I believe it was nine assists going into halftime in that game. Not too many turnovers. It might have been two or three going into halftime as well. Point is, for how much he handled the ball and the amount of passing he did, rather than forcing jump shots, he was a fantastic playmaker through that first half. Problem was, they were still down 2 or 3 points at the half. So I bring this up just as a, you know, you want to see when the defense adjusts and starts throwing everything they have at one guy, that you want that guy to be smart enough and start spreading the ball around, start trying to get things going for everyone else, and, you know, win the game that way. But when the rest of the team doesn't pick it up and actually win the game, it gets a little bit harder to do that, to, you know, I guess, convince yourself to actually start giving up the ball. So when you're looking at the lineups that he's been playing with, primarily, you know, there's not a lot of shooting. There's not even a ton of willing shooters that are out there with him. There's no one that can really create an advantage off of a 4-on-5 if it gets generated for them. It's really just kind of Cade doing everything out there on his own. And I don't want to absolve him of all of these turnovers, because, you know, I think there's probably only about, you know, maybe half of them, a little bit less than that, if he just cleaned up decision-making, would go away. But, you know, let's say that he does that and he's perfect on all these decisions. He's still at 3 turnovers a night that are just being forced and ripped out of him because the defense is throwing 3 guys at him. So, you know, what maybe needs to be done? What do you guys think about the context that he's been playing in? Am I just being too forgiving? Sean, what do you think?
I think that the answer is yes to everything, I guess. Too forgiving. Yeah. Things need to change. Some of it's his fault. Some of it's not. It's just a mess right now. There's no template for him to work from, because there's no history of success on this team, because he's been injured or the team's been limited. And now that the team is allegedly kind of more well-rounded and fleshed out, they've just been beset by injuries they haven't ever experienced before. So time will tell how much of this blame how much of this is a blip versus how much of this is sort of an endemic problem. My eye test says he throws several careless passes a game that have nothing to do with pressure. It's just poor decision making. You're hoping that's because he's played less than 100 career NBA games. I don't know. We'll see. In the meantime, I'm wondering now, is part of the reason that Killian Hayes is in the starting lineup not just his defense, but also because Monty Williams really wants a point guard on the floor with Cade to help alleviate some of that ball handling pressure? Maybe that means once Monty Morris is healthier, then he shares the floor with Cade. Maybe it's once Jaden Ivey proves himself worthy of getting out of the doghouse, he becomes a player that can share that responsibility with Cade, and a lot of the less is happening out of Cade's, you know, dribble when he's surrounded by 4 guys because they're running an actual offense with 2 attacking guards. So, you know, time will tell, but I'm seeing a lot of things on Cade that are Cade issues and not just lineup issues.
Yeah, and I think the playmaking flashes we've seen from Cade are why it's so important to put the right players around him. Like you said, Wes, against Atlanta, he had like almost 10 assists in the first half. So like, we know he's capable of that. It's just maximizing what he can do on the floor. And I just think right now, the guys he's playing around with for most minutes aren't helping him out the way he needs. Like Sean was saying, there's those like brain farts and everything that we're gonna have, and hopefully it's just something that he's adjusting to. But I don't know, I'm just really hoping for Monty Williams to try something, like put an Alec Burks or Ivy next to Cade in the guard spot for the majority of minutes, just so we can see if it helps him improve at all.
Yeah. Well, so the way I've been really looking at this is, You need someone out on the court next to him that can punish the defense for throwing three or four guys his direction. And right now, there just isn't. Now, you know, when you're looking at this roster, especially the guys that are just healthy, I'm not sure how many players like that there are, right? You know, because that's not just a catch and shoot guy. You need a guy that can get hot and kind of take over the game for a 3, 4, 5 minute stretch, really get the defense out of that shift that they're in. And, you know, you look down, Sasser's done it, but he's a rookie. You probably don't want to rely on that too much. Alec Burks is an easy answer. You know, Jaden Ivey, but he's in a doghouse for 20 minutes. You know, my point is, how do they get defenses out of this incredible tilt towards Cade's direction when he's out there? Like, what is the lineup combination that they could even use right now that kind of absolves this problem?
For me,
I think the easiest one would probably be Jaden Ivey as a break glass in case of emergency. Something has to change, and it has to change now, because that is enough of a kind of tone shift within the lineup that you might see actual results right away. If they wait until they're healthy, then it becomes a lot more easy to sort of incrementally make those changes by introducing more Monty Morris, and especially when Bogdanovich is able to come back. You need more than a catch and shoot guy, but an elite catch and shoot guy makes everything easier for everyone, not just Cade. And so that makes maybe the marginal rookie games of a Marcus Sasser, or the, you know, the attack of Asar Thompson, he's got some turnover problems of his own because he's a rookie, he's dealing with things. But if Bogdanovich is there providing space, then Asar's plus decision making and sort of the zip he can, you know, get into the lane with, that helps him execute at a high level. And we've already seen that Asar can make the right pass and think kind of a couple steps ahead. It's just that his dribble's a little loose right now, and he's not as used to defenses reacting as quickly. So that space is sorely needed. Some veteran decision-making, ball handling is sorely needed. There are pieces on the roster that maybe get it done, but nothing could possibly get it done tomorrow unless we officially declare the free Jaden Ivey movement and it actually works out.
Yeah, I was going to say Ivey too. And I mean, I think it's just, like, I'm at the point where I'm sure a lot of people are. He just needs to play more. When we first heard the rumblings of Ivy coming off the bench, I was okay with it because I thought it was still like a 25 to 30 minute a game role, like almost a sixth starter. It's clearly not that. So I think he just needs more minutes, however those come. And then speaking like along Cade, just, like, I think Alec Burks could help alongside the shooting. Like, we know he's one of the best, if not the best, on the team at hunting fouls and getting to the line. So I think that dynamic also alleviates some pressure off of Cade. And if it is Burks that is added into the starting lineup, I think Asar can still be like a secondary or tertiary playmaker after Cade and whatever Burks is doing. So I just want them to try something different. Like, it needs to be done at this point.
I agree. And now, to be clear, right, Monty Williams today, he did come out and say that he needs to do a better job getting Cade with more space out there on the court next to him so that he's not as focused on by the defense. So on that note here, the last thing I want to ask you guys before we dive into these questions, let's say, you know, by some miracle, something happens lineup wise where there is space out on the court and, you know, they do punish the defense well enough that you can't throw three guys at Cade Cunningham every time he turns the corner. How many turnovers go away? Because that's kind of an important question here, right? You know, we're talking about how many are kind of his fault, how many are forced. To me, I think actually successfully making this kind of lineup transition probably gets him down to like four and a half instead of the six that he's been at in recent games. But, you know, obviously that's still not a great number. But what do you guys think, Sean?
Well, he averaged just under four his rookie year. And right now he's averaging five.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're not going to see a huge difference because I don't think this team is that much different than his rookie situation. I mean, maybe it's marginally better, but not materially. And so you're just going to... Cade needs reps, and he needs to eliminate these pointless turnovers. I mean, a high-usage player is going to have a lot of turnovers, but you want different turnovers than we're seeing from Cade, where he's just making careless passes that are easily picked off, or he's trying to bounce pass it into a big man when the big is already surrounded by, you know, two defenders. You just want to cut those decisions out because Cade's decision-making is supposed to be one of his, you know, elite skills. He's supposed to be the guy that sees everything on the floor. So you need Cade to see that these are poor decisions and to cut them out of his game. Now, making a lot of poor decisions is kind of part of any young player's game. So it's not like it's impossible that this happens, but a lineup change is not going to wave a magic wand and then turn Cade into an elite distributor with like a high assist to turnover ratio. He's going to be a high assist guy and a high turnover guy. So hopefully the lineup can rebalance the scales a little bit, and you just need to see Cade get better and better every, you know, week, every month.
Yeah. And like you said, Sean, he's averaging five turnovers this year, which leads the league. I think the next closest is Luka at like around four and a half. So Wes, I'm with you. I'd like to see that number at least get down to four. And really, I think all that is like eliminating mistakes. Hopefully as the team gets healthier, he doesn't have as much of the workload on him and can get like a few more breaks. So hopefully we're not seeing him gas, which we've seen lead into a few turnovers. Like Sean was saying, he's a high usage guy. The turnovers are always going to be there. For me, it's just about limiting the careless ones. Like, I know like three turnovers in a game is probably good for him right now. So if we can see him string together a few of those or less, snipping out just careless mistakes, I think that would show improvement to me.
Yeah, I agree. So let's jump into some of the questions here that we've got tonight. Sean, I'm going to throw this one your way first. This one's from Base Pistons on Twitter, asks, why do you think Stewart's turnovers per game have taken such a leap? Is there anything that can be done to mitigate this?
Well, I think the situation is pretty clear. He's a power forward trying to do power forward things. He's being asked to do power forward things by his coaching staff because they know there are certain ways that a power forward needs to move the ball, needs to be able to, dribble into traffic when he gets run off the line. He needs to be able to make that sort of pocket pass in the high post, you know, on movement. He can't just be a guy who is camped out at the basket and then passing back out to his guards to try and reset position, or just on the perimeter moving the ball to the side if the shot's not there. That's not good enough to create the kind of offense and ball movement the Pistons need. So, you know, Stewart is hitting enough threes to work as a four. You'd hope to see more threes attempted to get that, to get that into defenses' minds that that's a dangerous shot he should take. But part and parcel of that is moving the ball and moving with the ball. And it's not part of his natural skill set. So you just have to take these growing pains and hope he can, you know, raise his game just like hopefully he has as a 3-point shooter. But I don't think that that is a part of the game that's going to sort of... This start of the season is not an outlier for Stewart as far as his turnovers are concerned. I think that's just the name of the game when you're asking Stewart to play this position. So you just have to grit your teeth, live with it, hope he gets better, and then hope, you know, the point guards and the shooting guards can cut down on their own turnovers to help sort of balance out this influx we're getting from him at the power forward position.
Yeah, and what I saw, I went and watched some of his turnovers. Like, a lot of them are just from putting the ball on the floor. Like, we know he's not getting the respect he probably deserves on the three-point line. So for me, I think if he can just do a little bit less, like, we know he's never going to be like a top-tier ball handler. So if he can just like put the ball on the floor a little bit less, like just maybe take some swings, if he gets the ball on the perimeter and doesn't think the shot is the right decision. So I really think a lot of it might just be when he gets the ball on the three-point line and just like doesn't know what to do and puts the ball on the floor, tries to get closer to the hoop, and bad things happen. So for me, with Stewart, I think it's just trying to like do a little more by doing less.
And I will say that I would say that as much as he's struggling this year, let's acknowledge that he's much better than he was last year when it was like truly a horror show. Like, you wanted to cover your eyes if he ever did any dribbling and ever tried to kind of like move a defender off of him at the perimeter. It was bad, bad news. I mean, he's not good at it. It's still bad, but he has made significant improvements so that it is less sort of eye gouging to witness. And so, you know, if he's made that progress in one off season, let's see what he can do through this season and where he ends up with, you know, in game 82 compared to game one this year.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I think this is really procedural for him. He's definitely improved, right? But it does seem like sometimes he's trying to do maybe a little bit too much. Like, I wish he would simplify his process down a little bit. Like, this is going to oversimplify it even for me, but like, if he's open, shoot it. If he's not open, just pass. Don't put the ball on the ground unless someone closed out on him. Because even last season, right, we saw something that he was every now and then pretty good at. If a guy gave him a hard closeout, he'd blow by him and get to the rim. And it usually ended okay. It was when he started to get adventurous with his ball handling that we got into some trouble. And honestly, we've seen some of that this year too. You know, he's turning down threes and kind of dribbling himself into mid-post looks. And, you know, those aren't the best out of him. I kind of wish he'd cut that out almost entirely. So I wish his process would be simpler. And I think that would also fix quite a few of these turnovers. So question for you, Blake. Do you think this is just him trying to play the four spot more? Or is this kind of, you know, more generally the direction that his career was always going to go, if that makes sense? You know, even if you move him back to the five, he'd still probably be doing a lot of this same stuff, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know, like, if it would be the way it was always going to go, because, I mean, I'm sure he always wanted to, like, work on his shot, but I don't know if anyone really knew it was going to be as big of a priority as it was. So yeah, I mean, we've basically only seen Stewart play next to fives and play in the four spot this year. So maybe that is a little bit of it. And like, we are talking about spacing with this team so much, like in the starting group, Stewart is the best shooter after Cade, maybe shooting even better than Cade. So I think that relates to him just like working around the perimeter and being in those situations where he has open space and tries to make something happen. So yeah, I mean, I hope the lineup, I know the lineup isn't going to resolve everything, but hopefully it could help when he's not that secondary spacer next to Cade, which he's just not.
What do you think, Sean?
I mean, I blame it more on the position change than anything else. I don't think this is like an Andre Drummond situation where he had this perfectly styled game that he could be effective, but sort of in his mind, he wanted to be so much more than he was, and it just turned him into this hopeless post player. I think Stewart is basically hearing he needs to get better at a lot of different areas of his game to have success in his career. He's hearing it from his coaches. He's training for it. Now he's trying to execute it in real time in games. It's not going to be pretty, not right away. And, you know, hopefully he figures it out. And if he doesn't, then, you know, this is always the dividing line with Isaiah Stewart. Is he a starting power forward or is he a backup big that you can slot at either spot? And there's sort of, because he has a less dynamic game, but he still has, you know, an effective three-point shot and effective defense. You won't know until you give him this shot, and, you know, his talent will put him on the trajectory where he belongs eventually. And, you know, you want to fast forward to get to where his ultimate ceiling is going to be, whether it's on the bench or not, but we just have to wait it out a bit.
I still think his best rotation spot in the future is going to be like the third or fourth big off the bench, and a really, really good and impactful one. But all right, let's jump up to our next question here. This is from our guy, Camille, asking, what is the maximized roster for Cade Cunningham when everyone's healthy? Blake, I'll throw this one your way first.
Yeah, I'll go with the starting five. I think it would be... I haven't seen... None of us have seen anything from Monte Morris, so I think he might be the highest floor like point guard that we have on the team. So I would put him next to Cade just to see what it happens. I don't know if I'm maximizing the roster by doing it, but I think maybe he could help secondarily limit some turnovers. And then after that, I couldn't not start Asar with like the things he's doing on the floor right now. And then I would definitely put Bojan next to him, just to have that shooting, spacing, and just someone who could score. Like, we just need scoring power next to Cade. And then I would round it out with Jalen Duren. Hopefully once the ankle heals up, he'll be back to what we saw to start the season. So just sticking to the starting lineup for me, that's what it would be. I'll also just note, I would definitely have Jaden Ivey as the first one off the bench in a bigger, like 25 to 30 minute role. And Stewart similar, not far behind that.
I think for me, largely similar. So, for the sake of not repeating everything you said, Blake, I'd look at it in two phases. What's the maximized roster for Cade for the rest of 2023? What's the maximized roster for Cade for the rest of the season in 2024 through April? So if I'm thinking immediately and assuming some health, I would think that it's probably Cade, Monte Morris. Then it's probably Bogdanovich. Then it's probably Stewart and Duren. Now that takes my favorite player of all time, Asar Thompson, off the floor. But I think this is sort of like a nod to Asar's versatility, because I personally would be comfortable with him playing the 2, 3, and the 4. And I would also want him averaging, if not the most minutes on the team, the second most minutes. So within that structure where you're like optimizing veteran shooting or you know, veteran play around Cade, Asar is the first one off the bench, and he basically just keeps slotting in further down the lineup as you're mixing and matching other players to, you know, take a breather. So still maximum Asar, but you have shooting with Bogdanovich, Stewart, and Morris around him. And you're really asking Monte Morris to play a lot more of the point guard role to take some of that pressure off of Cade. I think that gets him through this early trouble spot right now. At the end of the season, what you want to see from these Pistons is a couple friggin' wins, some improved play, some improved efficiency. And in the starting lineup, you want to see Cade, Jaden Ivey, Asar Thompson, Isaiah Stewart, Jalen Duren. That's the final five you want to see, and you want signs of growth from all those players and a semblance of an idea that they could fit together in the medium and long term, you know, next season and beyond.
So I've got a fun one, and I'm just going to run with it because it's different than what both of you guys have said, because otherwise I largely agree with you. Right now, assuming everyone was going to be healthy, the starting lineup I'd throw out there, if I assume that Jaden Ivey's not an option, which it seems like he's in the doghouse, so that's pretty safe, safe to say, I would go Cade, Asar Thompson, Bojan Bogdanovic, Isaiah Livers, Jalen Duren. And I do that. I think you have to keep Asar Thompson in there for all the reasons you just said. I mean, he's easily the best wing defender they have on this roster. And I think you could pretty comfortably even have him guard point guards at this point. He's just that athletic. I would be totally okay with it. Wouldn't worry me much. So you can take the defensive burden off of Cade Cunningham there. And then out on the wing, Isaiah Livers lets you do the exact same thing with Bojan Bogdanovic. Just put Bojan on the biggest guy, let him be as physical as he needs to be. Don't make him be quick. You can hide him in that way. He'll be okay, right? You also still have Asar that's helping out the rebounding. Livers isn't a great rebounder, but he can pitch in, and Cade's going to have to step up in that area. But I think that's kind of your best shooting and defense lineup that you can throw out there. And I kind of just want to throw everything at Cade right now. So, you know, going back to what we had opened up this podcast with, just it's so hard to discuss some of the turnover issues that he's had because he's in a context that's not all that conducive to him even having success in the first place. You know, so he has one or two every game where he just should not have thrown that cross-court pass, or he was not aware and he just got picked, or he dribbled into traffic, whatever. Those are bad decisions. He needs to cut those out. But when you're also getting, three or four where the defense is just swarming him and he can't get the ball out, it's really hard to judge how he is as a playmaker, which, to your point, Sean, is something we had all counted on, really having him as a high-level playmaker coming out of college in that draft. And you add this all on top of he misses all of last season. He only recently got over 82 full games of basketball in the NBA. He's still effectively a second-year player, and he's young. And they're running a heliocentric offense out there with him at the moment because he's got no help. Like, there are just all these excuses, and it makes it really difficult for me to evaluate and get a good grasp of what we've actually got, right? So I want to take all those excuses away. And if he's still up at like five turnovers a night, all right, we just learned something. We just figured something out. Now maybe we got to go get another point guard, right? He can't have the ball. So that's where I'd go with it. And yeah, Livers is kind of a hipster choice here. I will admit that. And it's almost embarrassing for me because I was very much not on the Isaiah Livers bandwagon last offseason when everyone was arguing that he should start. But here I am today, saying he probably should start because I trust him to make a catch and shoot jump shot, and I trust him on defense. And I'm just going to wear that badge. It'll be all right.
Solves your spacing concerns. That'd be my lineup.
Exactly. It's all about the spacing. Sean, let's talk about
I think
your
my lineup would beat your lineup.
No way. My lineup's the best. What are you talking about? My lineup would go 82-0 if they threw it out there. I guarantee you.
Your lineup feels a little small to me.
It is. It's definitely small. I'm not a fan of the two bigs. So if we're going to go like a full rotation here, I would drop Bagley and Wiseman entirely. I wish they'd just go nine man. Let Stewart be your backup five and four. I know Marvin Bagley's been playing well, but he's still not a great defender, and they're throwing he's been better. He's been better on defense. He's put in an effort in. I've got to give him credit for it. But at the same time, he's not a good shooter. Space the floor. Give these guards, you've got a bunch of young guards, and you've got Asar Thompson who projects as a ball handler, and you're not giving any of them space. I'm ranting forever. Blake save.
No, I like it. I like the idea. Like I've been saying, I just need this team to try things because like what's been happening is not working. We know to get the best out of Cade Cunningham, aside from the decision making that needs to improve, we need to put the right pieces around him. I don't know if anyone really knows what those pieces are right now that we have in house. So, hey, I'm all for just trying different things every game, every couple games, until we find just something that shows some sign of improvement.
I agree. So let's jump on now to the next question we've got. And before the end of the evening, we will be touching on Sean's favorite player in the whole wide world. So let's jump to this one from Dave Giancola. He asks, any concerns regarding Cade's jumper? Seems to come up short a lot. Is it tired legs or is it something with his form? Sean, break down the jumper for Cade Cunningham. What do you got?
Man, this is a scary question for me to answer because I'm starting to get very concerned with Cade's jumper overall. I know it sort of looks pretty, but to me, it's always a little flat. It's always consistently short. And I mean, I know that Cade as a player has like limited explosion. He's not an elite athlete, and therefore he was not going to be able to succeed at the rim like some other, you know, young players that are often picked very high in the draft who are such crazy athletes, like Ausar Thompson, for instance. Okay, but what if part of like that lack of explosion also is impacting his jump shot? I'm not like a biomechanics person. I'm not, you know, a shot doctor or anything. It's just this, like, this fear that is gnawing at me. Like, it's part of his, like, physiology making it so he's never going to have a consistent jump shot that we can rely on to be an efficient, effective weapon. Because, like, you know, he's got a lot of good traits. I love his attitude. He could be a leader of the team. If he's always going to score 25 points on 28 shots, then I get much less excited about like Cade Cunningham, the elite point guard of the Detroit Pistons. That's not going to create championship level basketball. He needs to become a much more efficient shooter than he's been. I need to see some evidence that can happen. Like we said early, maybe it's all this garbage lineup stuff that's really limiting his impact. I certainly hope so, because if he can't develop a consistent jumper, then like that's red alert bad news for the Detroit Pistons and for Cade.
Yeah, so I looked at his shot charts and he's shooting 40% from three from the right side of the hoop and less than 30% from everywhere else on the floor. So I don't know if it's a bit like he needs to shoot better overall. But I don't know if there's an element to it of he's not getting to his spots the way he wants to. I think some of that may tie into, again, just opponents throwing everything they can at him. If he thinks he has enough space, he's just like launching something super quickly before he just gets swallowed up. And I mean, he's never going to be the guy who's like standing in the corner and like shooting threes from there. But I don't know. I just think like there might also be an element to it of he's not getting exactly where he wants to go. He has to fight through a bunch of stuff through defenders. And when he gets somewhat of an open look, he's just taking it. And maybe it's not the best shot or maybe it's not his shot overall. Like you were saying, Sean, like I really did expect to see like a considerable jump in his jump shot from his rookie season. It doesn't seem like that hasn't happened yet. We need to see some improvement, but again, like I hate to keep falling back to the lineup stuff, but maybe it is putting him around like the best people, getting him to his spots when he finally gets freed up a bit somehow.
Yeah, I do think that a part of this is like his turnovers, you know, to put it bluntly, garbage decision making on Cade's part that you just hope he cleans out of his game, because you see these shots and they're just bad shots, bad decisions, bad time in the shot clock. Why are you settling for that 18 footer? It doesn't have a prayer. It's like you know, why are you making that pass? Why are you dribbling into four guys? Why are you taking that shot? This is all part of the Cade stew we're dealing with. You know, young players make mistakes. He's played 88 games. We will need to see improvement. And, you know, by game 120, maybe a lot of this is out of his game. By game 160, maybe he's on the normal trajectory toward where other number one picks are. He's certainly not there yet. You know, it's a legitimate concern for people to have. It's a legitimate problem for Cade right now. But he shoots 87% from the line. It's consistent. It's kind of clean and smooth somewhat, at least, you know, from my layman's eye. Upper body seems fine. So for me, it's like I'd love to talk to somebody that really knows about sort of the biomechanics of loading up your shot, you know, with your lower half, and if that's a Cade problem, because he did have, you know, major shin surgery and he missed a lot of time. So maybe that's part of it too.
So I have something. I've got something for you, Sean. Now, I'm not a shot doctor.
Is it going to make me feel good or bad?
Well, probably good. Because while I was neither of those things, I was a really good shooter. For quite some time. Like, that was the thing. That's what I was good at, which, if you look at me, that makes a lot of sense. I'm not that tall. Regardless, the one thing that Cade does, and it just boggles my mind when I see guys get into the NBA and they don't do this one little thing, is just stick and hold their release. He alligator arms a lot of these jump shots. And by that, I mean he hits the ball, leaves his hand, he hits the follow through, and he drops his hand right away and starts moving back the other direction. Good shooters outside of Steph Curry, he's an anomaly because he can just throw the ball up, not look, and turn around, start jogging it. It doesn't matter. It's a swish. Everyone else, every other good shooter, Ray Allen, Klay Thompson, you watch them. They release that ball. They stick, and they hold their release at least for a beat before dropping and going making a play, right? Like, good shooters don't follow their shot. They don't go running back on defense. They stick and hold it because they know that ball is going in. And when you alligator arm the shot, you're either going to be like wildly off left or right, or you're really short a lot. I don't know why it is, but that's just how it goes. So, and Cade's not the only young guy that does this. There are a lot of shooters that get to the league and they alligator arm everything. And it blows my mind because it's such a little thing that you could do. And all of the really good shooters have always done that, right? So there's my one thing. I don't know if it's tired legs. I don't know if there's anything else like mechanically going wrong, but I know he drops those hands a lot and it bugs me as a shooter. I wish he would stop. I wish he'd stop.
So we need more Cade style points on the shot.
Exactly.
It needs to be put a little stank on it to hold the follow through. He needs to pose.
Even just drop the left hand, hold the right. Just get the gooseneck up there, man. Let it ride for a minute. Pose. And it sounds hilarious, but it's true. Like, go watch Ray Allen. Watch how he'd shoot in games. You will see him land and wait a hot sec and then turn around and go every time.
So he should just watch Jordan Poole game film until he can become an elite shooter. Learn everything about the NBA from Jordan Poole.
Anything but that, Sean. Anything but that, I swear. Do not put that evil on me. All right, let's jump up to our next question. We've got our guy again, Camille. He's asking, do you think Killian Hayes can outplay Monte Morris? And this is now that Monte Morris is looking like he's around the corner from returning, getting more healthy. I don't think he practiced recently, but it sounds like he's on the mend. He'll be close. So, Blake, what do you think?
I'm going to go ahead and say no. Unfortunately, like even if I want him to, I just think that Monte Morris was, before he came here, he was like one of the best, if not the best, backup point guards in the entire league. I think Killian has a long way to go until he is, like, I hope he can be that one day. He's shown things to prove he can maybe get there in terms of his work defensively at times, like being careful with the ball, not turning it over, the playmaking. I just think like Monte Morris is a much more finished product. And he's just, like I said about him earlier when we were talking about lineups, like, I think he raises the floor of just the entire team when he's out there, which I don't think Killian is doing, to be frank, right now. So at the moment, I just have to say no. Like, I hope one day he can get there, but not right now.
I mean, I think my answer to that question would be a question as well, which would be, what are the two biggest issues the Detroit Pistons are dealing with right now? Three-point shooting, turnovers. Now, Killian's not a huge turnover guy. He's certainly not a three-point shooter. And if you look at Monte Morris, you know, throughout his career, but also last year, he is 38% from three, 54% from two. He averaged, where's my per game stats? I've lost them. He averaged 5.3 assists to just one turnover. That was tops in the NBA. He's one of the safest, most consistent passing point guards in the NBA. He can shoot the ball, therefore he can play off ball. I don't know if at 6'2 he can hold up defensively, you know, in a starting lineup. That would be my biggest concern if you wanted to start him next to Cade. But, like, he will help this team, and he will do things Cade cannot, or Killian cannot do. And the things he can provide are exactly what this team needs, because as much as I want to give Killian credit for the growth he has made as a decisive player and somebody who's actually making a few shots in the NBA this season as opposed to no shots like previously, you know, them's the breaks. His defense is really good. It's not as good as Asar Thompson. So if I want Asar Thompson on the floor at all times, and I want Cade Cunningham on the floor a lot, then I need somebody that can play between those two guys. And maybe that's Monte Morris more than it's Killian.
So, simple answer here. No, not at all. Not going to happen. So I'm just going to move on to this follow-up question from a friend of the show, Ain't Nothing Better Than Being the Big Cheese, and we love that username. It's awesome. He asks, is Killian the odd man out when Monte Morris returns, and should he be? So I'm going to send this one to you, Sean, first, but yes. Go ahead.
I would really have to reckon with what I want Jaden Ivey to be in this lineup. Because if I want Monte Morris to optimize Cade, maybe in the starting lineup, if I don't think Jaden Ivey can be that consistent offensive shooter, then I want Jaden Ivey as a backup point guard. If I want, you know, Jaden Ivey out in the starting lineup, then Killian can be like a primary point guard playing off of Monte Morris, and there's room for both of them. And then maybe Sasser takes a bit of a backseat because he's, you know, he's shown a lot, but he's a rookie. He's going to have his ups and downs. So there might still be room for Killian in the rotation. You know, in a best case scenario, Killian can find a home somewhere else where he will get minutes, where team needs his defense, where they need his passing, and they have other shooters around him. It's just so hard to get the mix right with Killian on the Pistons right now. So I guess I'm giving myself therapy in real time and coming to the conclusion that the answer is probably Killian is the odd man out.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough because, like, logically, I want to say yes to that question, but also, like you were saying, Sean, we've seen growth with Killian, and I'm just thinking, like, is he really going to get just thrown out of the rotation, like, once we get Monte Morris back? Because or after that's happened, like, right now, I don't know. And it might just be I'm a little, like, struggling to see through him starting every game this year. Like, I struggle to see him just being fully out of the rotation once Morris comes back. That said, like, I mean, where else are those minutes going to come from? Like, you look to, like, Marcus Sasser, I think he played less than 10 minutes against Atlanta. So I think that's, like, the obvious one, which sucks because Sasser has played really well too. I just really think this coaching staff and organization is going to find a way to get Killian some minutes, even with the return of Morris.
That is a big fear of mine. Yep, you've nailed it. anyway, we're going to move on to another question. This is from Base Pistons on Twitter. He asks, is Sasser really that good? Or have we seen this before with Saben Lee? He has struggled to get it going since that Bucks game. Blake, you first, my man.
I'm gonna say he is that good. Like, and not just because of like what he's done so far with the Pistons. Like, we've definitely seen those flashes. Just like, he was so consistent in college too, as like a shooter, as a defender. So I don't know, like. I said in the draft process that Sasser was one of the most like NBA ready guys. Like, he could probably be a backup guard in the league today. I think we've seen flashes of that already, and he's only played 12 games in the NBA. So I don't think like him having an off game is just throwing him off totally or showing the true him as a player. I think he is really good. He's already shown that he can be good in this league. So I think he'll only improve. Hopefully there's the opportunity to do that. But I think if he has that, he'll definitely continue to prove himself.
Yeah, I think that if you're going to compare him to Saben Lee, you have to remember sort of the Saben Lee context. And the Saben Lee context was really taking a guy in college that was playing, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, he was almost exclusively like an off-ball player. And part of the gamble was, let's take Saben Lee and try and turn him into a point guard in the NBA. And he showed some things he could do. They tried to develop him into a shooter. That never happened. He, you know, went into attack mode, and sometimes he found success. But there was always a definitive ceiling with Saben Lee. And success would happen in fits and starts. With Sasser, what you're seeing is somebody who has the skills, I think, to play NBA level defense day one. I think he's shown that. Whether it's, you know, consistency, that's another question. He can get his own shot, create his own shot, because he's a decisive player and can get into his step back jumper very easily. And he can drive the lane, and he can catch and shoot, and he has that good floater. So it's not always going to happen all the time, but it's going to happen enough where you see the building blocks of a real NBA game and a real NBA role. So I'm a much bigger believer in Sasser long-term than I was of Saben Lee. All that being said, Sasser is a rookie. Rookies to me are always about show me what you can do, and I don't care about how consistently successful you are at it, because I'd rather see you do things that I haven't seen other players be able to do, because then it's all about teaching you how to do it consistently. So I think Sasser struggles as a point guard right now because he can really only make one read. He can't, you know, play point and break down complex defenses. So they just need to put him on the floor in spots where he can make quick, decisive actions, be an off-ball shooter, score, kind of quick burst offensive threat, and then throw him out there and have him be a pesky defender, and you have yourself a good bench player for this year, and hopefully he keeps growing beyond that. But there's a lot of what I just said that Saben Lee never brought to the table. It just wasn't part of his game.
Yeah, I would echo everything that you just said there, Sean. I think you're looking at Marcus Sasser is a guy that, you know, profiles as a very good all-around guard, but he is short, right? He's a generous 6'2". I think they list him at, like, he's probably a little bit shorter than that. So he's not going to be this all-NBA level defender. But he does have a lot more wiggle than I think I ever gave him credit for in the, you know, draft process. And I think, you know, with the Saben Lee comparison, the thing to remember with Marcus Sasser is that, you know, yes, he's NBA ready and he's a rookie, like you said, so he is going to be inconsistent. But you're also looking at a player that profiles as a really, really high-level backup, not as a, you know, superstar or something along those lines. You know, even as a starting point guard, he might just be a bit too short as it is to ever really do that at an incredibly high level. So you know, I just think the expectation is okay that it's a little bit lower, because you're hoping that he just develops into, well, Monte Morris one day, right? Except maybe a better defender. You know, that's a very reasonable and honestly probably high-end outcome that you're looking at for a guy like Marcus Sasser, and that's okay. That's a really good and valuable player. But, you know, it's not Cade Cunningham where you see him go cold for a couple of games and is the franchise in peril, right? It's just not to that level. So, you know, I think he's not Saben Lee. He is this good. And he's just been a little inconsistent, you know, like rookies who profile as high-level backups do. You know, you got anything more to add here, Blake?
No, exactly what you said. Like, I mean, the only thing with Sasser that's interesting to me right now is just, like, now that Ivy's back and whenever Morris comes back, like, I'm interested to see like his minute share heading into the year. I didn't know, like, just because we had how full the guard room was, I didn't know what his role was going to be like. I even thought maybe they'd send him to the G League to like get some minutes. I think he has already proved that if he was ever there, he would just absolutely dominate. So I'm interested to see once Morris is back, like, what the minute load is like for him, since we've already seen it like against Atlanta decrease with Jaden Ivey back in the rotation.
Yeah. The only other thing I would say is again, to the Saben Lee comparison, if you're thinking about Saben Lee, he was like a slingshot of a player. Like, he stretched back and he flung himself towards the rim. And he found a lot of success as a scorer, especially in the G League, less so in the NBA, because basically you're only solving for one problem. How can I prevent Saben Lee from bulldozing his way to the rim and trying to score at the basket? Once you have that answer, you've solved his entire game and made him almost completely ineffective. You know, he's slowly built his game. He's still with Phoenix, I believe. So he's building out an NBA career as a second-round pick. That's good for him. With Marcus Sasser, you have a lot more than one question to solve as far as his offensive game. And that just makes him so much more versatile and much more dangerous of a scorer, even if he is, you know, knifing his way to the basket and getting pretty floaters that are very memorable. It's not just that. There's other elements you have to account for, and that's why he's going to find success, I think, at the NBA level.
Last question here is from our guy, Ain't Nothing Better Than Being the Big Cheese. Again, he's asking, do you think Monty Williams will change up the lineup tomorrow if Duren returns? And then also, if Duren doesn't return, would he still change it? And he's asking, would you want Monty Williams to change the lineup in either case, that being whether Duren's back or not? Sean, what do you think? We've been talking a lot about lineups tonight, so.
Yeah, I want to be hopeful. So I'm going to say yes, he will change the lineup if he returns, and he will change the lineup if he doesn't return. I think my hope is that he says, attaboy, Killian, you've really shown how much you've grown your game. You've shown you're an NBA point guard. You've shown you're an NBA defender. Please be our sixth man and help us. You know, be effective for 48 minutes, because we need somebody that comes off the bench and is able to do the things you do. And oh, by the way, we're adding a shooter as our new starting point guard or shooting guard. And that could be, you know, Alec Burks for now, Monte Morris maybe, and Jaden Ivey maybe. And it's time to get some offensive flow and also offensive space for Cade. So that should have happened already, and it can happen as early as tomorrow. Yes and yes.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of at a believe it when I see it kind of thing on this, like, starting group changing and just putting a shooter into the starting lineup. Like you, Sean, I'm hopeful that now is finally the time. Like, I think the Atlanta game was like, all right, we think we can get this one. Like, let's just see if this lineup can pull it off. And I feel like if there's ever a time to make a change, I mean, it was probably a few games ago, but it's definitely now. Like, Wes, a couple weeks ago, we were giving them the benefit of the doubt and just saying maybe he wants to get through 10 games or whatever it is. And we're through that and beyond the losing streaks at 9 now. So I, again, I've said it multiple times. I think they just need to do something different. I would love to see it as like Jaden Ivey being rewarded with more minutes. I'd also be happy with Burks in the starting lineup. So I don't know. I just hope that tomorrow is the time for the lineup to change, but I'll patiently wait.
So here's the optimist take for my optimistic take for the lineup not changing, just so I can be positive while also hedging all of my bets. I would say maybe Monty Williams doesn't want to look like he's, you know, shuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic, and he doesn't want to make a significant move here, and then another player gets healthy, and he makes another significant move, and then another player gets healthy, and everything's constantly changing. So, status quo, maybe here until he's ready to make wholesale changes, and that would mean waiting for Bogdanović to come back, because by the time Bogdanović is back, Livers and Morris and Duren are probably also back. So you can say we finally have our full team. We've done an assessment of everybody's strengths, everybody's weaknesses. We know, or we think we know, how things can fit together. And we know exactly what Bogdanović's game is. We've seen it for over a decade. And we know how players can play off him. And therefore, our new starting lineup is this, this, and this. And our new bench lineup is going to be this, this, and this. And we really think people are going to excel in those roles. And then the wins just never stop.
Like your optimism. And I'm thinking along the same lines, because I honestly, while I would want the lineup to change now, because I think, like Blake said, the time to change it was a few games ago. So while I'd love it if it did, I doubt that it will. For Friday's game in particular against Cleveland, they do trot out that two big lineup. So, you know, just on face value there, matchup-wise, I think you're pretty locked in to Stewart and Duren. And honestly, you know, like we mentioned earlier, if I'm getting my way, I'm still bringing Stewart off the bench. So that's not happening. I would not expect that to happen tomorrow. Now, you know, I think he's also got a bit of an excuse to not do it, because a lot of the effect that we're trying to get out of this is more space for Cade Cunningham. And that starting lineup does not have to play together a lot. Right now they are, but they don't have to. You can stagger guys. So if he starts to stagger, you know, Killian Hayes out and gets Alec Burks in a lot earlier, Jaden Ivey in a lot earlier, and just starts pairing or using, you know, triplets around Cade that give him space more often throughout the game, I think you could get, you know, a lot of the same effect that you would by starting off with just a more space-friendly lineup. Now, you're risking Cade getting off to slow starts because he might not have the most space out there to operate. But, you know, long run over the 48 minutes of the game, there's no reason that starting five should have played over 100 minutes already this season. Like, you can stagger those guys. That's what that whole thing's for. So I think most likely no lineup change until, like you said, guys get healthy. But in the short run, you know, he's already talking about trying to get guys more space, trying to make the court easier for Cade to navigate through. And he could just do that by matching the guys that are around him after the first, second, and third subs, doing a better job with that. So that's why I don't think it's going to change, even though I do wish it would.
Well, Alec Burks closed the game against Atlanta. So I think even just like changing things like that in those scenarios, hopefully, of course, we're not already out of games by that point. But if you're optimizing your best lineup, having shooting in for like fourth quarter, I think that is a benefit too. But man, the losing streak has an opportunity to get up to 10. Like after it, we don't really see the end of it near. So I don't know. I just think you got to do something. I don't know what that is, but now is the time, I think.
Asar Thompson starting center until Duren's healthy.
I'm with that too.
I wouldn't hate it. But hey, speaking of, let's close on this one. Second week in a row, let's close on Asar Thompson. Sean, I know he is your guy right now. He has impressed the crap out of you. It's been, and to be fair, he's been playing incredible basketball all throughout, you know, even going back to summer league. So I want to give you the floor.
Nice of a hater like you to say that he's played well.
I was wrong. It only took in that draft.
A historic, prolific rookie performance for you to say he's played well.
Tell me all the reasons that I was exceptionally wrong before the draft, thinking that they should not have picked Asar Thompson. You have the floor, man. Tell me where I screwed it all up.
So, well, I think early success is actually conducive to his sort of upbringing as the twin of an elite player like his brother Amon. I think that the reason Asar can be so effective right away with his elite like athleticism is because he's always had to play off Amon. Like, that was him growing up. It was, how do I fit into all the gaps? How can I get mine when Amon is always getting his because it's coming so easy to him? And so it was basically maximizing every single extra opportunity, and that was cutting and playing with power and making the extra pass and trying to, you know, run the floor, keep up with his brother. And so it put him in a place where he could find success right away because he has this elite feel, this elite athleticism, and he's been in this situation before. Amon has not been in a situation where he's all of a sudden trying to run a team and he's not two times better than any other player on the floor. So I think that's part of it. And then, you know, they say that you can teach defense, but I think wanting to be a dog on defense, that is something you are born with. It's a God-given talent, and that's just something Asar has. He just has this instinct for defense, anticipation, closing out, and making the right read, making the right play. So he's always in the right place. I mean, I say that every time I talk about Asar Thompson. The thing I love is that, you know, he reads everybody, every NBA player reads the game faster than I do, but only so many of them can actually keep ahead of their competition. And he's always exactly where he needs to be. And he's thinking further ahead than the person he's defending. And so he's always in an optimal position to make a play or make a block or get a steal or get a rebound. He's just always in the right place. And that is why he's been so great so early in his career.
Yeah, 100%. And I think we've seen it. Like, even though, I mean, the knock on him in the draft process and still where he needs to get better is the shooting. But like, what I've liked is he doesn't seem like afraid or not confident it at all, really. Like, especially those games where he's just getting left alone at the 3-point line. Like, if his shot is the right shot and he knows that, he's going to take it. I think we've also just seen, like, not to sound cliche, but on like what a good like guy and good teammate that he has been, like his comment after postering Clint Capella about how it was just like 2 points or whatever. I mean, like, what else are you going to say? But even through the draft process, like, you heard nothing but good things about like him and his brother character wise and I think that we've seen that shine through with the Pistons on top of every crazy and like historical thing really that he's doing on the floor.
Sean, I think this is why, you know, Blake is our draft expert here on this show and not me. Everything that I thought about him leading into the draft outside of that jump shot was wrong. I was exceptionally wrong. And I could not be more happy. He has been incredible. Honestly, he's got an argument through, I mean, you know, it's only through, what, 11, 12 games. But he has an argument for being on one of the all-defense teams. Like, if he only keeps up maybe 80%. Of the stats he's been putting up. It's ridiculous for a guy as short as he is to be doing the things that he is doing. On both ends, too. You know, he's not invisible out there, even without a jump shot. He's making an impact on offense. This isn't a Stanley Johnson situation where he's a very good defender, but you're playing 4-on-5 on the opposite end. Like, he's still making an impact there. Like, this has been an incredible instant impact. out of this guy. Awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he knows how to score because he knows exactly where he needs to be to get an easy makeable shot for him. He's not shying away from those three-pointers. He'll airball 4 3-point attempts, and I just love every second of it. I don't bat an eye. Just keep doing whatever you're doing, Asar, because you're doing great. But also, he's cutting. He's got that nasty short turnaround in the paint that he likes to deploy because he can push somebody kind of off his space with his strength and then just instantly jump, you know, with a huge vertical. So he just has a nice clean look at like a 10-foot shot, which is well within his capacity to make. He's going to that more and more. And, you know, he takes advantage of every transition opportunity. The Pistons have been the worst transition offense for the last decade. I don't have the stats to back it up, but I've seen plenty of games. They never know how to run in transition. Asar knows how to run in transition, and they're taking advantage. And the biggest thing with Asar is he has no jump shot, and Rookie of the Year is almost exclusively an offensive game of counting stats. Who's putting up the points? Who's filling the box score? He's in the Rookie of the Year conversation with like zero shot because he can do literally everything else, and he's doing it at a high level.
All right, Sean, let's wrap it up here. I want you to answer this question, and then when you're done answering the question, tell all the people where they can find all your work, all your thoughts on the Pistons. So, can Asar Thompson eventually be a guy that averages 20 points per game?
Yes, because I think that he can get his three-point shot into the low 30s eventually, and that allows him to score at that level just enough to allow the other parts of his offensive game kind of fall into place, so you can't basically scheme him out of scoring. And he's also going to be, conveniently, like a 36-minute-per-night player because you're always going to want him on the floor for his defense. And he can guard so many positions. So I think like that is his level pretty, maybe not like every single year, maybe not comfortably, but like that is a ceiling I would be comfortable with for him. I'll wrap it up by saying you can find me and all of us here and a bunch of other wonderful contributors at DetroitBadBoys.com. And that is the most important place to go because that is the place where you can read all our stories, click all of our valuable links for ads that help pay for the site and keep the site going. So just go to DetroitBadBoys.com and read every article and click every link.
Thank you so much, Sean, not only for joining, but for your consistent support of the show. Again, we couldn't do what we're doing here without Sean and also the support of the rest of the Detroit Bad Boys staff. So shout out to you, Sean, again for joining. And shout out to everyone who joined us live or whether you're listening tomorrow, Friday morning, once this is uploaded, wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks, everyone, for providing all your great questions and talking points. We'll catch you next week, whether on your commute or live with us here on YouTube. We can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you all.